Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Lisa Anderson here with you. And as usual, a little preview of what's coming up for our inbox. We have a listener who's in her mid-30s, and she is battling a lot of discouragement and basically feels like her life isn't going anywhere right now. So she wants to find direction, and we're going to ask one of our counselors for some insight on that. And then for our culture segment, Dr. Jason Carroll is a professor and researcher who recently was part of a study called The State of Our Unions 2022. And the study asked the question, is it better to marry later or earlier in life? And so Dr. Carroll is going to tell us about the team's findings on that. Well, here we are for our roundtable, and it's a great time of year, I think. We're into, well into spring here, hopefully, wherever you are. To kind of do that spring cleaning life, kind of like, what are some life skills? You know, what are some things that I need to shore up in my own life? So one of those is the ability to say no, because I think as we, you know, head into a new year, there are so many opportunities in front of us. And then we get a few months in and we're like, wait a minute, what did I commit to? What does this look like? Where's my schedule going? Why is my life out of control? And so we're going to have a conversation around that today with Gabriel, Bill, and Annie. Hey, guys.
Hey, hello. Howdy.
Hello, hello. Okay, so first off, we all have to set the stage as to where we are in our no-ness. So go ahead and give me an idea, give us an idea here of how difficult is it for you to say no, and are there any specific situations where it's harder for you to say no than others?
I think it's pretty difficult to say no when someone's coming to you with, for instance, working with church or working with the youth, right? My wife and I just recently started jumping in and working with the youth group at our church. And it's like, wow, like we can add a lot of value if we do this. Like we want to say yes every single Wednesday and Sunday, like twice a week. Well, that's a big commitment, right? But it's hard to say no if I feel like I'm going to make an impact or if I'm going mm-hmm. to add value to someone else's life mm-hmm. In that situation.
Yeah, it's like for a really good reason.
Yeah, it's a good reason to say yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. How about you, Bill?
If somebody looks at me with those really sad eyes and says, please help, it's like, oh, can't
wait a minute, let me write that down. I have to make a note of that. Okay.
I will not look
good
at
to
you
know.
From
good
now.
To know. Yeah, don't look.
That's why you wear sunglasses.
Yeah, exactly. Shut my eyes. Mm-hmm. No, that I think it is that feeling of I don't want to let somebody down. And mm-hmm. so some situations I look at, it's like, no, I can't say no. I've got too much going on. But even then, I still feel that pressure. It's like, it's only a 4 or 5 week project. How could I refuse kind of thing?
Yeah, no, that's good.
I think it's difficult for me to say no when I feel like I'm committed to something or I'm committed to that person. So if someone asks me to hang out, I'm always like, yes, I'd love to. And then I really start to think about my schedule and I'm like, no, can't do that. And I realize I'm like, oh, I really should think more about the thought process beforehand and see my commitment to that person and say, I still love you and honor you, but I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
So learning and growing a lot in that area.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big one for me is the whole like finding time to invest in people and hang out with people, because I would love to everyone that I have ever encountered anywhere, spend more time with them. But eventually you have to like have your circles of people that some people you just hang with consistently and some people are more fringe or you hang with them in groups or whatever. But I mean, it's like I like coffee, but if I did coffee with every person that I would love to do coffee with, one, I'd be broke. And two, I would just, you know, be highly caffeinated. So anyway, so yeah, it's tricky. I find that whole the relational component, because again, it's a good thing. You know, you mm-hmm. want to have good relationships with people. So but that could get pretty tricky. It's not difficult for me to say no for things that definitely aren't in my wheelhouse. Like if someone comes and asks me to do their taxes, I'm going to be like hard
right.
pass. But
like, are you sure?
Especially like stuff that I know if I just give it a few minutes is something easy for me to help them with. Like I have a friend, you know, who's constantly like, Lisa, can you just help me craft this email? Because I don't really know exactly what to say. And I'm like, absolutely. Well, if I do that all the time, then I'm just like writing emails. Okay. But mm-hmm. it seems so easy. But, you know, when you have so many of them, then it can get tricky. So, okay, well, let's talk a little bit about, I think there are elements, because again, we're talking about good things. What about when it comes to like the fear of missing out on something, whether it's an opportunity, whether it's something that you have, you know, some opportunity to grow or to meet someone or to be somewhere. Or I think social media has played into this, that it's just not, I don't know, maybe for some people it's cool to say that you just stay home every night of the week. I don't know. I feel like that's something I aspire to, but it never happens. Mm-hmm. But there is that idea of some people are just like movers and shakers and they're always doing something new or learning something new. Gabriel's doing another degree in something, whatever, and he's finding time for that. So like, how do you guys fit that in? Or how do you find a way to say like, okay, I got to prioritize this over this?
Man, I think for me, it's really just kind of like that Monday, Sunday night before, I kind of like plan out my schedule of like, this is what I'm doing this week. And there's nights where I realize as an extrovert, I have to have time where I'm making myself be alone and just like spend time with the Lord and just be. Mm-hmm. And I have to say no to prior commitments or things that people invite me to because, wow, what is my number one priority in this stage of my life? And that is, you know, time spent with the Lord and growing myself in this season. So I think it's better to like understand yourself a lot more of like when you can say no and kind of prioritize your time beforehand. Because in college, I stretched myself really thin. Mm-hmm. And I realized like how much it just drained me. And then now kind of living on my own, having a job, kind of making my own schedule, I'm like, oh, like I can say no to things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I miss being with people, but also at the same time, I have to understand, like, that there's a bigger goal in mind and a bigger priority that I have.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm on the other side of that coin where I'm more introverted. And so my first thought is, I don't want to do it. I don't want to be with people. but I can't say that.
How do I get out of this?
Yeah, how do I get out of this? And people don't like that. But I have a friend that constantly is asking, hey, let's go out for a hike. Let's go do this or that. And it gets to the point where sometimes it's like, let's do next week. And it's like, I have to live sometime. Uh-huh. And so that gets tough for me to really wrestle through that and say no. Or I'm busy. I can't do it that. But let's plan this next, you know, the week after or something like that. But that really is stressful sometimes to face that. And that's something I struggle with is like, I do not want to let a friend down. Mm-hmm. But the reality is I can't give everything because I have to, you know, like you just said, that you have to take things in as well and just be refreshed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, so much of it is a question of priorities. Mm-hmm. Right. And not priorities in a sense of like, right, like getting this next degree is really a big deal. And, you know, getting the house in order is a big deal. Right. Those are big priorities. But I'm thinking in terms of like a life priority. Right. Like a value. What advances the values that I want to be true about me and that I believe about God. Mm-hmm. Right. And if that's another hike or if that's getting coffee with a friend at church or whatever that is. And I have to pick between the two, right? Which event or which thing that I'm spending time doing is going to advance the kingdom and align with the priorities that I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good to think through, I think, in that sense. Okay, well, what about, you know, because we were talking, we alluded to this a little bit, the whole sense of figuring out what you're good at, like using giftings instead of just being open and available for every single thing. And I feel like this is something that I've learned only in pieces because, for example, now at church, in fact, I was having a conversation with a friend about this, of like, there are all those people there that are like, you know, okay, I'll help with an event or I'll help with a committee or you give me a task or whatever, but don't ask me to lead it. Well, I'm the person that has no problem leading it. And so there are a lot of other things that are like, you know, like the meal trains at church or whatever, you know, and someone needs a meal. There are ladies at our church that have an arsenal of like 50 meals that they could just make like with their eyes shut. Okay. For me, if I'm going to make a meal for a family, I have to pray about it. I have to plan it. I have to probably Google recipes. I mean, it's just like so exhausting for me. And so that freedom to often say, you know what? Let these other ladies, the meal stuff, be their jam. Now, there are people that I make meals for and I will step in and stuff like that. But there are just some people that love that. And I'm like, mm-hmm. let them do that and have that be their jam, and then other things I can contribute to. Do you guys see, when it comes especially to helping others out or to being part of something like a ministry, do you find yourselves using your giftings, and what would those be? How'd you find them out?
A real example from my life is my wife works with our church nursery and the kids ministries. And so I've been asked a lot, hey, come in and teach Sunday school for kids. And for me, it's like, I don't have that time. I would love to. It'd be a blast. I don't have that time to commit even monthly right now. So that's been one. And kind of blessed I have my wife to help push back on that. But it's also another friend confronted me recently. I was trying to figure out something, and she just said, hey, take off the junior God badge. And I had to stop and go, oh, that hurts, because I want to serve. I want to do well. But at some point, I think, Lisa, like you said, you've got to let others serve God too. And I can't be everybody's hero. So that's humbling to say that. But it's also acknowledging I'm not going to be 100% at everything.
Yeah. That's good.
I think one of my spiritual gifts, I don't even know the right way to phrase this, but I love inviting people in. I love just bringing people together. It's like one of my biggest things. I just, man, it just energizes me so much. And so that's kind of draining a lot of the times when you just are constantly doing and inviting people over and like trying to be super hospitable to people that come in. And at times people expect for me to throw parties or to have social gatherings.
I was just gonna say, now it's like, okay, don't worry, Annie's got it. You know, we're, we don't need to do it.
It's like, and I can't even imagine that as an introvert. It's like, that is your gift. Go. Don't ask
me. I'll take it. Come on. No, I'm just kidding. No. But people, they have this expectation that our house will like have parties or host events and stuff, and at a point, I have to say, no, like, I won't be in town. I can't take on that responsibility. I don't want to, you know, take on so much. And it's nice to see the community of friends that I have of, like, other people have, like, stepped up and have stepped into those roles. But also at the same time, it's like trying to find a good balance of wanting to be hospitable and really invite people in. But also at the same time, just allow others to do the same thing, because they're probably gifted in that area as well. And I could just be like, okay, I'll do it. But it's really just taking the time to say, okay, like, I just don't have the time on my plate. And if someone else wants to take that on, please. And realizing just like the differences, and also just like allowing others to step in and encourage them in that too.
It's kind of like realizing your limits.
That's what I've learned a lot from moving out.
That's hard, though. That's just really hard.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of this in terms of the church body, right? If everybody was a hand, if everybody was a feet, right? We're all given different skills and abilities and talents. Lisa, you were saying you can lead a food train, but maybe not make every meal. And Annie was like,
"Make the spreadsheet." Really
exactly.
I can invite the people in to make the meals.
You know. Yeah. But with that comes, hey, I need a left hand with my right hand. I need someone else, too, that I can help, that can help me out and that I can help out. And we can go back and forth or whatever that looks like.
Yeah. You know what I realize my gift is with that? My gift is in standing up in front of a group of people and simultaneously shaming / guilting them into signing up for the food.
It's a powerful
spiritual gift of shaming. Someone,
Bill, you're going to be making a casserole on Wednesday. Get it?
They're not going to eat it.
You're like, what kind of casserole? I'll tell my wife.
There we go.
This is my burnt offering for Lisa.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so we've had a lot of conversation around healthy ways to say no, but what about how do we balance that with sometimes when we really should be stretching ourselves? So, like, stepping out, taking risks, doing something that maybe we're not good at, because it's, we shouldn't always trend only towards the easy. What about, like, how do you find good ways to say yes to some things that might be hard but might ultimately be for your good?
The first question I would ask is, am I going to grow in that experience, right? By jumping in and helping out in this area, or by saying yes to this person, am I going to grow? And maybe that's a selfish way to look at it, but that would be one way that I would really evaluate if I would say yes to a project or something in that.
One thing I've learned is you may get invited to do something and you're at first resistant. I'll find opportunities pop up that it's like, that is so not me. I just really have no desire. But I really feel like no, God's opened this door, step through it. Mm. And I haven't lost anything by doing that. Mm. If it doesn't work, it's okay to get to a point where it's like, oh, okay, I learned a lot through this, but it helped me realize where God really has me, but he used this to grow me. So it's kind of that feeling that, I think God wants us to walk through doors he's opened, if nothing else, to learn and grow, and maybe to learn what we're not good at.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah, I think I would agree with that. Just being willing, I think, is something I've learned a lot, is just being willing and able to do things that maybe I'm not super excited about. And the Lord knows that. And just being able to step out in faith and take that leap of faith to say, okay, Lord, how are you going to use me in this? How am I going to grow in an area that I'm weak in? Mm-hmm. How am I going to how am I going to produce faithfulness? I remember I was talking to someone and he was praying for me and he said, give Annie as much faith just to see just in front of her, just so she would fully rely on you in faithfulness. And I was like, oh, that is a lot. But it's true. It's like, I just want to see a little bit where I can only fully rely on God in everything I do in life. And I think that's like big, of just like saying yes to things that I may not be fully comfortable with committing to, but knowing that the Lord's going to use me and like he will be with me through it all, mm-hmm. which
and
is really great.
I knew too that sometimes when you said that, I realized there are times where I've learned that God just wants me to be willing to take that step. It may be that as you step forward, that door closes, but you really get the feeling that, okay, God just wanted me to have the courage to step and follow. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I've learned, is sometimes that's really the growth point, or that's what you're saying yes to, really.
Yeah. Well, and it's almost, if you're in a situation where you can give yourself some margin, it's a lot easier to stretch yourself, you know, to be able to do that. I mean, I remember this in the season of where I took in my mom and became a caregiver. There were other things that just had to go. I mean, that was a very stressful season for me. It was very new for me. And so I had to step back, like at church, for example, and like, I can't be involved in all the things I was involved in for that season, because I had to prioritize, you know, caring for her and stuff. And so, but it doesn't mean that those things couldn't come back eventually, you know, or, you know, sometimes it's, if I know I'm going to hang out with a neighbor or someone I don't know well that I'm not as comfortable with, I just kind of buffer that time. So I'm not going from like one, introverts need to be good at this, because you can't just go from one exhausting event or conversation to another one, to another one, and then to work the next day. And then to, you know, if it's not life-giving, you got to give yourself time to recover a little bit, I think. So that helps as well. But it is, I mean, to have opportunities to grow is just a great place to be. Okay, well, as we finish, let's just does anyone have an example of a time where they successfully did say no and they're grateful that they did? I mean, it ended up being a good situation. Or conversely, you can just talk about where you flat out, you know, just ran yourself ragged because you took something on that you knew probably wasn't the best for you to do. Just helpful. Show our audience that they're not alone in the struggle here.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, no, you can go.
You're
ahead.
The extrovert.
Okay.
The inviter.
The inviter. In college, this was probably one of my hardest struggles because I said yes to everything. Mm. Every single night I was busy. I had youth group on Wednesdays, had youth on Sunday, had night classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, had sorority meetings throughout the week and events throughout the week, and people would invite me to things. My schedule was jam-packed, and I still had school on top of that. So there was a point where I started to really just, like, kind of, like, slip in some of my classes because I was saying yes to so many social things. And in my mind, I was like, this will be fulfilling. And and then looking back, it's like, oh, man, it's like I really had just, like, mental drain, and I just had to really think through a lot of things. And I remember I came home one day and I just laid on the floor in my apartment and I talked to my roommates for a long time, and they're like, Annie, you have to give up some of the stuff that you're always committing to. You have to start saying no to some of the big things that you hold on to because you just want to you just want to spend time with people. And like, we know that's your heart, and we know that you want to, like, you know, be there for them and to share the gospel and to be that light. But also at the same time, it's like, do you not have the faith to trust that other people are going to step in and also do the same thing? And it kind of hit me, and I was like, okay, yes, I have enough faith that the Lord will be in there, be in those places that I'm not, and he's going to use other people, and it's not always going to be me. And I said no to a lot of things that next semester, and I realized just like the weight that was lifted. I was like, oh, I don't have to stretch myself so thin where I'm just running off fumes. And it was really just the Lord giving me a really hard season where I said yes to really learn what it really meant to depend on him and other people as well.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I would say too, where I'm struggling with some decisions right now is having to ask, why am I doing this? What's the motivation for doing it? Is it because I've been doing it for a long time and just feel that expectation of myself to continue? Or is it, do I find life in, does this really pull on my gifts, or am I just doing this because it's a friend on the other end saying, hey, I need this every week? So that's where I don't know that I've mastered the art of saying no. I would say that's where God's really tugging on me right now. It's like looking at my motivation for why I'm saying yes and going, well, is that really where I want you to be? And that's the season I'm in right now.
Yeah, I had a situation in college. I was super involved with my couple of different intramural teams, discipleship, like council on my hall. And like, all again, all really good things. And I was walking across campus with a friend, and we stopped like three or four times talking to different people that I had known and just caught up and then kept walking. And later, my friend looked at me, he goes, yeah, I can't walk on campus with you anymore. Like, it takes me an additional 10 minutes to get anywhere. And it hit, I was like, oh, I'm probably too busy. Like, I'm probably, like, it, I didn't know if I felt exhausted, but it was that comment of, yeah, it takes me 10 minutes extra to walk across campus. And I was like, okay, something in, like, that, that's a me problem. Something has to change on my end, regardless if that's my schedule or how I stop and talk to people or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, I mean, and to have the awareness finally, I mean, sometimes it takes someone bringing up something that you're like, oh, wait, this is my normal. That's weird. That might need to change. Is a good way to self-evaluate, I think, for stuff like that. So.
Yeah, something else, if I could throw in, Lisa, is just learning that I like that badge of busyness. I like, it's like, because I want people to trust me and, you know, oh, I can depend on Bill to do that. But if I'm doing that for everybody, I'm going to be undependable at a crucial point. So that's hard to let go of that and say, no, what really matters here?
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of time to figure that out.
Yeah. And I think that's so great. And I think that sometimes, you know, it's trickier. Maybe this is more, you know, extroverts have their own problems. That seems to be more of an introvert problem of like, evaluate again, just what we're spending our time doing, period. Because again, it's not, I need to cut out these relationships because I have five shows I need to binge, and or I just don't want to talk to people ever again or something. I mean, you have to recognize bad patterns in yourself too and realize like, oh yeah, okay, something, why is this becoming more prominent and what do I need to do to change it? But also taking in the realization that like, yeah, it's okay. You know, sometimes I have to give up something for a better thing, and that's okay too. So, well, you guys, thank you so much for weighing in on this. I really appreciate your comments. It's great.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Champion, you got it in you. Don't give up. Nothing can stop you. You got to move.
Well, folks, we're here for this week's culture segment. And you know that throughout the history of the Boundless Show, sometimes we bring on folks who talk through the latest trends, the latest research with us. And lest you just find something else to do and think this is going to be a big snooze fest, stay with us because I think you're going to find what we have to talk about today very encouraging and very insightful. And so I have got Dr. Jason Carroll with me today. He is he's actually a professor at the School of Family Life at Brigham Young University. He is currently serving as the associate director of the Wheatley Institution. Obviously, he is a speaker. He does a lot of research. He's a friend of a guy named Brad Wilcox. Some of you who are longtime listeners know that we have had Brad on the show before. And so, Jason, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Well, thank you, Alicia. Thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. So I was telling you before we started taping how, you know, we here at Boundless are no strangers to marriage conversations, largely because we realize that over 90% of young adults want to get married and assume that they will someday. But at the same time, many don't feel that they're equipped to get there. And they feel like maybe, you know, certainly millennials being the product of the largest divorce generation, the boomers and others who kind of feel like, what is this thing called marriage? And, you know, how do we practice at it? Can't we just live together? Does it really matter? And so you have done, you and your colleagues have done some extensive research on this and talking through it. And so it's really great, really a privilege for us to have this conversation. I want to kick it off by basically talking through this study that you did. And, very extensive in that sense. And in fact, it's called the 2022 State of Our Unions, Capstones versus Cornerstones, Is Marrying Later Always Better? And so, and of course, you know, there are some people listening who are like, no, it's not better, but if I could just find someone to date, maybe I could get married. Okay, so people are already frustrated. But I kind of want to back it up to a portion of that title where in the study, you actually explain the difference between cornerstone and capstone marriages. So I want you to start out by talking that through, because I think that provides the mindset for a lot of us to start this conversation.
Yeah, I think that is a good, helpful starting place. So the State of Our Unions report is an annual report. Each year it comes out with an update of all the different indicators of marital health in the United States and how well relationships are doing. And so it provides that. But each year it also does a brand new study and focus. And so this is done with Brad Wilcox's group, the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. And we do it in collaboration with the Wheatley Institution here at Brigham Young University. So this year, as you noted, we focused on this distinction of what we're calling capstones versus cornerstones. Basically, that's just a metaphor to capture this basic idea that we have a culture more and more that has been reinforcing a narrative about marriage that older is better. And this therefore promotes what we'd call a capstone model of marriage, right? That you get all your ducks in a row and you spend your young adult years with your focus on individual preparation, readiness, schooling, education, career development, home ownership. There's a number of things that have now moved into that kind of model of readiness. And marriage is then intended to kind of be the capstone, the cherry on top, so to speak. And that is largely believed to be that's the best way to have the most prepared, the strongest, the most ready marriage. A lot of that being driven by just, I think, the numbers we have of the median age of marriage keeps moving up in the country, particularly in our high urban city center areas. But also there's this long understanding of the teenage marriage risk. And the data continues to show that if one or both partners are teenagers, there's some struggles there. But that narrative has started to also talk about 20-something marriages and whatnot. So we wanted to compare in this study these cornerstone marriage model to a capstone model, which is a bit more of the pattern we see when couples come together in their early and mid-20s, still looking at those milestones of life readiness and schooling and career and other things, but often go through much of that together. So they treat marriage more as a cornerstone that they build these other pursuits on top of. And to see, did we really see any differences between the outcomes? Is it really better to follow that capstone model?
Yeah, that's good. Well, I want to back up and talk a little bit about maturity because, you know, I could tell you, and you've probably heard this too, when you talk to parents of young adults, many of them will say, in fact, I was in a conversation with a family member a while back who had gotten married in the 70s, and they were talking about, you know, with me about some Boundless stuff, and they said, well, Lisa, the thing is, we got married, and then it was like at church, you just went into the young marrieds class. There weren't all these other options for young adults that there are now, and I think a lot of parents of young adults are just fearful that their young adults aren't as mature as they were back then. They feel like, oh, well, no, we just got into jobs and we just did this. We started having kids, but they can't imagine their adult child doing the same thing. Is that a problem on the parents' part or the perspective, or is there any truth to that? Like, what are some of these milestones they're supposed to be hitting?
I love it, and I love you bringing in the parents, right? Because I have the unique opportunity. I teach the marriage preparation course at BYU. We're one of the few universities that I know of that actually has a course for all the students on campus that are able to take it as an elective that's a marriage preparation, a marriage readiness course. There's other universities that have relationship skills classes or these types of things, but this one keeps its focus on marriage. And, the course services almost 2,000 students a year. So it's a great opportunity to get into kind of the real life, all of this. And my students are always bringing up the, but what about my parents this and the parents say this? I think there's two things. I think on the surface, there might be some truth to the idea that maybe the current rising generation isn't as ready or prepared or mature, whatever term is being used. But my quick pushback would be there's absolutely no reason why it has to be that way. I mean, the very conversation is helping us make a very important distinction, and the age of marriage research is very important on this. The reason why the cornerstone marriages are doing just as well as the capstone marriages is because after we get out of our 20-something years, it's no longer about biological age or chronological age. It's about maturational age. And maturation is more about values and priorities, life choices, committed behaviors. And there's no reason someone can't have the right values, priorities, and committed behaviors at 24 just as easy as they can at 44. And in many ways, too, some of the experience, we always assume that just getting older makes it better, but you also have as much of an opportunity to develop immature attitudes, behaviors, and patterns as you get older as well. So it's really about, well, then, you know, rather than saying, hey, they're not ready, it's more about, well, then how do we help do that? How do we make this a little bit more intentional? Because this is all about maturational age that you can do a lot earlier than I think we give people credit for.
Yeah, and that's good. And I'm not going to totally, like, you know, the entire interview play devil's advocate with you. Don't worry, Jason. But but I'm hearing, again, some of my young married, young adult friends say, well, Lisa, here's the deal. I remember having a conversation with one of my coworkers a while back. He said, it's like what was promised to our parents is still being promised to us. But the problem is the promise is falling flat. So this idea that if you just work hard, you get a bachelor's in something, you're going to go into a good company and you'll be able to stay there, and eventually you get your white picket fence and your dog and your kids and everything, and they're like, oh my word, you know, but our parents didn't have tens of thousands of dollars of school debt, they didn't have like a horrible job market, they didn't have a tanking economy, they didn't have, you know, all, you know, this and this and this, they didn't grow up in the wake of 9/11 and whatnot. So I want to use that as a springboard because, you know, let me be the downer. Talk with us a little bit about some of the pros and cons of marrying both earlier and later. And let's look at a realistic picture of this and why you think that those who want to marry earlier really can in this space, and what are some of the things they can do to get there? Because clearly we know that marrying later, you know, there are some pros to that. There are some things that are good to have under your belt. But at the same time, like you said, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to wait. So let's talk about just some of the realistic, a realistic look at the good and the bad and maybe the ugly of those two decades.
Yeah. And the main starting point, as we found in the new report and has been found in other studies, too, is we do fundamentally look at the outcomes of the couples that have these different starting points. And if all of those concerns and worries and challenges were at the end of the day overwhelming for earlier married couples, we'll see this in their outcomes, right? They married too early. They didn't just marry earlier, they married too early. And when we can see in our study, we found that the couples married between 20 and 24 were doing just as well, if not a little bit better, than the couples that married at 25 and older, right? So then we start to fill in the gaps and say, well, why is that? What's going on? And that's where I think the pros and the cons conversation comes together a bit. All of those challenges of student debt, of the need of more education, of those types of things, very accurate. I would never want to dismiss some of the realities, some of the modern challenges and realities for the current generation of young adults. But the simple truth is, those challenges are there to be met whether you're single or whether you're married, right? And so the idea of confronting those together versus confronting those on our own is a reality that somehow we're not going to reach a point that those things kind of, you know, we can reach a point that we've kind of gotten past those or those are no longer there. So the main advantages we see for earlier marriage, it appears to be, is we there's a lot of emphasis in culture today about forming your identity, right? Young adulthoods, this time to find yourself. It's this time to get your sense of self. And I think there's some real value to that notion and that idea. But we also know that successful marriages are couples who have a strong, what we sometimes call we identity. And so there is an element that often earlier marrying couples, and when I say earlier, be clear here, right? I'm talking about early 20s and going forward. We know teenage marriages are a different risk and a different pattern, but there seems to be a bit more adaptability, a bit more of building a sense of self around the idea of couple. There's clearly some abilities to make some shared decisions in shaping the future and in crafting a life together that has a little bit more adaptability and space in that. We know in relation to issues like fertility that while we have social scripts that are pushing marriage later and other things, fertility is a sticky point that won't always move with our social delay. So that seems to have some advantages and some possibilities in earlier marriages. Probably the biggest con with the earlier marriage, with the cornerstone marriage approach, is when it disrupts educational trajectory. Mm-hmm. So if couples can have a strategy and have an approach that when marriage happens at that time, there's still a completion of school. There's still degrees completed after marriage, for example, if there's college opportunities or if it's career training or other types of things. If those things can still happen, there's no research that shows that there's greater or lesser value to a degree completed before marriage or a degree completed after marriage. So we know that educational attainment means a lot in the modern economy. So if there's plans and strategies for that to happen after marriage as well, the couple will still experience and have the benefits of that as they set a foundation. But if marriage disrupts those educational trajectories and they're not completed, I think that's one of the biggest cons that can happen with an earlier marriage.
Yeah. Well, and also one of the big complaints, and that's a good point, you know, that you're talking through some of that. I see a lot of folks who are like, you know, saying, well, how do I make sure that I really know this person? Or maybe they came out of a university setting. Now they move to a new city for a job. They're like, I got to get to know all new people. Or they start dating someone and they're like, well, I want to have all my ducks in a row. I want to make sure that I'm making the right decision. And the study and past studies, you know, I've talked a lot about cohabitation, which is clearly a popular option for many people, even in faith communities today. And you are saying, you're saying that the research shows it's actually harming people's chances at marital success, which we would agree with here at Boundless. But talk through a little bit of, people will say that. They're like, I know, Lisa, you're going to say it's bad. You're going to say it's bad. But it's just, financially, it's so much more feasible. And I need to get to know this person or this guy. If I live with him, he's going to be more committed to me. And so maybe do some work in debunking some of those assumptions.
Yeah, this has been a major area of focus for me over the years in research. In my writing, I've labeled these types of patterns marriage preparation paradoxes. So they're behaviors that people are engaging in a marriage readiness mindset that they believe and are hopeful will make their chances of a successful marriage more likely, when all of the empirical evidence shows us that they're behaviors that will make a successful marriage less likely. So they're paradoxical, right? Mm-hmm. Best kind of everyday example I use. This is a little bit like turning the jar lid the wrong way, right? You think you're loosening the jar lid, but you're actually making it tighter. You're getting further away from your goal rather than closer to it. Cohabitation is probably the prototype example of that, right? Back in the 1980s, some of our best and brightest minds in the social sciences in the United States claimed that we were going to see a major decrease in divorce rates because of the surging rates of cohabitation. The belief was that the cohabitation was going to act like this Darwinian survival of the fittest mechanism, that only the strong relationships would survive and move forward to marriage, and therefore to kind of weed out all the weak relationships from the herd. And, wow, we'd have all these great marriages, and so therefore divorce was going to go way down. Clearly we didn't see this. We now have approaching 40 years of consistent research that has shown that couples who cohabit before marriage have higher divorce rates, not lower. And while some of the newer studies have shown that that effect has maybe gone down a little bit, there's still not a single study done to date that has ever shown that cohabitation has the effect that it's promised to have of making a better choice, better preparation, and better readiness. It's still considered by the vast majority of marriage experts as a risk factor for marital success. And like you said, most people say, what? And this is why these are paradoxical, because there seems to be a sense of logic to it, right? Wait a minute. You wouldn't buy a car without test driving it, would you? Then why should I get into a relationship that I don't test drive? But that's why these preparation paradoxes there's myths embedded in them. Mm-hmm. And the biggest myth is to believe that cohabitation actually test drives marriage, because there's this belief that somehow you're doing what you would do in marriage, and the research is very clear. Cohabiting couples don't live like married couples, right? There's something about full commitment that opens people up to greater investment and to greater sacrifice and a future view of that relationship, that they act and behave and do things differently. They get involved with each other's families. They share their finances. They get invested in this shared life together. So one of the problems of modern dating is what I call hedge your bets approach to relationships. We're trying to find a really, really great relationship. And then when we have a great, great relationship, then we'll fully commit to it. The problem is that we're mistaking the power of commitment. Commitment creates really great relationships. And so without commitment, people don't make those same investments and relationships never become what they are. Our culture is saturated in marriage preparation paradoxes. There's many others, too, that are in our culture that people believe will help them be more marriage ready, and they actually end up having the opposite effect.
Yeah. Like getting a dog and parenting that and thinking that's going to prepare you for...
Somehow that's a parenting.
Yeah.
We've done research, for example, on what we call the sowing wild oats paradox.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got this common idea that your single years, your young 20 years, your college years, that's a time for, you know, to sow your wild oats and have a number of sexual partners. And right. And then the language is get it out of your system. Mm-hmm. So get it out of your system. So then you'll be ready to settle down and settle down in marriage.
Yeah.
Well, the research has long shown, not just our research, but all the field's research has shown that number of sexual partners, early sexual patterns in relationships, right? These have all been linked to higher divorce rates, not lower. So they seem to be getting something into our system, not getting something out of our system. And I think it causes people that start to have very, very different views. It doesn't prepare them for the intimacy, the personal commitment, the person-centered love that's needed in marriage. It tends to set up a different approach to those parts of relationships that all the evidence shows us they're not having the effect. So, again, there's some logic to it, and on the surface, people say, no, that seems like that would be the best way to go. But like I said, we've got 30 to 40 years of evidence now showing us that couples who don't cohabit, couples who don't sleep around and sow their wild oats or do these things, they end up, you know, having the lowest divorce rates, having the strongest relationship quality. So it's not harming them to avoid cohabitation at all.
Yeah, well, such great insight there. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. It's so crazy. Folks who are listening, we are going to link to this report. Again, it's the 2022 State of Our Unions, Capstones versus Cornerstones. Is Marrying Later Always Better? Dr. Carol touched on fertility in our conversation. We didn't even get into that, but that, you know, there are a lot of findings related to that, like people who think, well, I got all the time in the world to start a family, and the thoughts around that and just other things that are presented in the report. And, you know, not that we're saying here, folks, that this is like, you know, we often talk here at Boundless. We're not saying this is a marry or die, just go find anyone and get married, because that's the ultimate pursuit. I mean, and you're going to get into something unhealthy. But we're talking about intentional thought and preparation towards marriage and thinking through the timeline and the ramifications of that. And Dr. Jason Carroll has been here to provide some great insight on that from his research, you know, in the past and this current study as well. So, Jason, thank you so much for being our guest today.
No, I'm happy to spend some time.
Awesome. Okay, well, I want to make you aware of the 2022 State of Our Unions, Capstones versus Cornerstones. And the topic is Marrying Later Always Better? We've been talking with Dr. Carroll. He was an associate editor on that. And also, I want to make you aware of the book, The Sacred Search by Gary Thomas. Many of you are already aware of this book. Certainly, if you've been around Boundless for a while, you are. Well, we are making this book available to you this week for a gift of any amount to Boundless. So go to boundless.org. You can search for 742. That is this week's show number. And you just go there to boundless.org, click on the book cover, give a gift to Boundless, anything that you can afford, and we will send this book to you as our thank you to you. So go ahead and get your copy today.
Oh, I love to hear the song of creation, the wind and the rhythm of the rain. Oh, the thunder, it speaks of your power, but there's something in the sound of the saints. I've been washed in the roar of the ocean, found peace in the echoes of a cave. And the trees of the field, they clap their hands, but there's something in the sound of the saints. From the lips of those you save, a redemption song will rise, with a sound so full it cracks the sky. Whoa.
Well, folks, we are finishing out the show by opening up our inbox where we answer one of your questions. So I'm bringing in one of our counselors, George Stenke. Hey, George.
Good to see you.
Good to see you and to have you here. Okay, you said that this scenario that I'm going to talk about here is not uncommon, so I'm really looking forward to the advice that you have for this woman. She says, I am a 34-year-old woman, and I still don't know what I'm doing with my life. I'm frustrated with what I haven't accomplished, and I'm feeling hopeless as if my life is going to go anywhere. Years ago, my mom got sick, which caused me to stay home to take care of her and my family. Now I have no direction and I feel stuck. How do I have hope and at the same time move forward and not just let life happen to me?
That's a sad scenario, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
More than likely, the majority of people that she knows have gotten married. They have children, maybe even some of the older ones, grandchildren by now. They've got their degrees, they're moving on with great jobs, and here she is, as she says, I'm stuck, and the loss, how do I deal with the loss, and how do I have a future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, I mean, I would say with the exception of the mom factor here, which, you know, that was my story. I took a break to care for my mom and all of that, but this could be anyone in our audience. The whole idea of the person who just feels like, I thought there would be more of a straight line in my life of like growth, of opportunity, of just feeling like I've arrived. So what would be your encouragement to her in going after this?
I would say, first of all, to acknowledge the amazing gift that her mother has received. Mm. I mean, because you know this personally because you cared for your mom. I mean, that kind of love, that kind of commitment is so precious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't put mom away in a home. We didn't call somebody in to take care of her. I personally stepped up and gave mom the kind of care that, quite frankly, no one else could give.
Mm-hmm.
She should be applauded for that kind of sacrifice, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
Getting that perspective, she put her life on hold so that mom could have a better life in her last days.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge, totally huge.
Okay. So what about now, 34, trying to figure out how do I make up for lost time? What if her career is stalled out? Like what, you know, she just feels like I've kind of derailed. Where do I go from here?
I think that on a practical note, I would encourage her to go to a really good employment agency because they offer fantastic services. They will help her to put together a resume that's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Many employment agencies will allow you to take specific kinds of courses so that you can gain job skills.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't go to work, they don't get paid. So there's a vested interest in them making you successful.
Yeah.
The second thing that I would encourage her to do would be to call Focus on the Family, call our counseling department, and just speak to one of our counselors because she may need some mental health counseling.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds as though she could be a bit on the depressed side, maybe a little bit anxious about, you know, can I even have a life at this particular point in time?
Mm-hmm.
And we would love to walk her through that conversationally and even try to find maybe some specific support groups in that area that might be beneficial.
Yeah, that's good. I think, too, just as I'm thinking of different seasons where I've been, you know, with the ups and downs, and it could be, you know, as you're writing this, like your friends are now in a different life stage and you just feel left behind or whatever. It's so great to just step up, try something new, whether that is try a new small group, try a take a class, do. Sometimes you just have to shake up your routine to not feel stuck or to feel like, you know, because any new relationship might introduce you to new possibilities, or it might be something, you know, there might be something that you can learn, whether it's actually taking a class in something or doing some kind of building a new hobby or something.
Mm-hmm.
But just not that I'm saying like get a hobby and your whole life is going to be solved, but it just kind of gives you that little spark of something new that is something to look forward to. And sometimes it does just by shaking up the routines that we've allowed ourselves to be in, just gives you that little encouragement to move forward. So, George, thank you so much for weighing in on this and kind of giving her a little jump start and some ideas of where to go. And definitely, I agree with George in just saying sometimes you need encouragement and you need to talk to someone like one of our counselors here at Focus who can kind of just listen to you and give you a couple thoughts that maybe, you know, you hadn't considered yet, and just get you on the road to, even if you need some additional help, finding someone in your local area who could kind of help you move on this journey. So, George, thanks again.
My pleasure.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. We love it, of course. I've said this before, when you hop over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review for The Boundless Show. If you just look it up there, you have the opportunity to leave us a review. Let people know what you think of the show, how it's been helpful to you. And that is how other people find the show and will be willing to give it a chance. So we would super appreciate it if you hop over there right now and leave us a review. Otherwise, I will see you around next week. This is Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.